I'm very happy this morning to be able to introduce once again another true friend of this center, Arthur Vergara. I first met him through his wife, Christine, when she and I were students together in Dr. Walker's classes in the 1990s. I soon realized, however, that Arthur had been a part of my life for far longer than that. As longtime editor-in-chief of DeVore's publication, his personal stamp was on just about every New Thought book I had read. We all owe him a debt of gratitude for his lifetime's work and devotion to truth and its expression in written form. Because of the years he applied his keen intellect and skill to every line, every word, every idea carried throughout the New Thought Library, we are gifted with a legacy of perennial philosophy publications that we can rely on and be confident in for their integrity and faithfulness to their source. We talk a lot about expanding our scope, relaxing our absolutism, being open at the top, but because of Arthur and his work, we never have to stray too far from our strong roots and the words that first ignited our consciousness and set us upon our path. Arthur Vergara is still passionate about our religion, our science, our philosophy. He knows it inside and out, and as such carries with him the treasure of our history. And so we are honored to have him here, a scholar, a teacher, and a respected friend. Please welcome with me Arthur Vergara.
Good morning. Thank you very much for your kind welcome to come back to the spiritual home created for us all by a man to whom I'm deeply indebted and always shall be, my great benefactor, Dr. David Walker. And thank you too, Reverend John, wherever you are, for the kind invitation extended to me this morning on behalf of all of you. You know, our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, has written, "Man must become more if he wishes to draw a greater good into his life. Know that the greater the abundance of every good thing which you're bringing out in your life, the more perfectly you're satisfying the divine urge within you." And those two words, within you, are a perfect intro and definition of our tribute this morning to the person who put his life on the line and walked the talk, as they say, to teach and demonstrate these truths to a greater number of people than any other single person in our entire New Thought movement. The single most widely heard, widely seen, and widely known of all the teachers in our history. It just so happens his name was Frederick Joseph Eichenketter, which is quite a mouthful. 29 letters in all, and he immortally abbreviated it to Reverend Ike. Many of you have probably known of him, but few outside his community really knew him at all. Although his community numbered in the many thousands, and his outreach nationally and globally was literally to the millions. But I say relatively few really knew him, because as wide as was that outreach, the widest and the largest in our 150-year history of what we call the New Thought movement, there were many ignorant and erroneous and class and cultural and even racial prejudices lined up against him. So typically, he went his own way, succeeded beyond all imagination and precedent, and he came to the end of his days 5 years ago here in the City of the Angels, 3,000 miles away from his power base, which included a headquarters in Boston and an entire city square block in New York's Manhattan, which was the Christ Community United Church Center, the Science of Living Institute and Seminary, and the Reverend Ike ministries, a church of immense proportions and beauty, a New York City landmark. In the 1920s, it was built as a palace theater, and it was one of those early movie palaces that lived up to their description. Today, it's known as the Palace Cathedral. Reverend Ike brought in 5,000 Sunday parishioners every week, and hundreds during the week, too, for the many activities that they had. There you can still find it. There it's still active, busy, and dynamic. Its beacon star shining above a 7-story prayer tower out over Manhattan in the evening and across the Hudson River, even into the state of New Jersey. Let me tell you a little bit about Reverend Ike. He was born in 1935 in Ridgeland, South Carolina. His father was a Baptist minister. His mother was a teacher, literally in a one-room schoolhouse. They were not terribly well off. The boy was a problem solver even for his peer group. And at age 14, he became his father's assistant pastor and held that job down for 4 years until he went off to the American Bible College. And when he graduated from that, he then went right away into an Air Force chaplaincy program. And then he returned to South Carolina, where he founded his own church, the Universal Church of Jesus Christ for All People. And it was then in 1958 and there that he began to feel, as he said, cramped by traditional Christianity. And I think many of us have come into our movement of religious science, or it could be unity, divine science, any of the many under the New Thought umbrella, have variously been felt cramped by our backgrounds in religion, looking for something more, something bigger, something better, something new. And we are finding it every day now in this wonderful instruction. Reverend Ike found it actually in the same place, and he began to get his lead from our old movement. I say old, only 150 years old, but all very new to him. In 1964, he moved to Boston, and he founded what he called the Miracle Temple. And I think he called it that because miracles were happening there, miracles of healing. That's much associated with some evangelical and other churches, but he was doing this on a different basis. First of all, most of you know, I'm sure, that our own movement derives from that very Boston and Maine area 150 years ago. In the middle of the 19th century, to be more precise, healings were superabundantly taking place, and they were being written up, not in church bulletins, but in newspapers, in Boston, in Belfast, in all those places. They were happening because of the activity of a handful of people who were bringing a new understanding to bear on what you might call spiritual psychology, religion, philosophy, and psychosomatics. What were these healings telling these people about the constitution of the human being? And for the answer to that, they didn't look up to a revealed God. They didn't look up to doctrine, dogma, revelation, the churches. They were looking, in fact, at what they called, and we have called over the years, man. If I may use that word, we mean more than just the male gender, of course. Looking at man is the way our movement began. Dr. Ernest Holmes has famously said, "We shall never know more about God than what we know about man." A revolutionary statement, blasphemous to many, completely contravening the old dictates of the old churches. Anyway, 1966, Reverend Ike moves down to Harlem, and he takes the Sunset Theater on the main strip there, 125th Street. And there, the marquee is so small that it doesn't accommodate his name, Frederick Joseph Eichenkutter. So that's the time and the place when he reduced it to Reverend Ike. 3 years later, he plunks down $500,000 to buy the Palace Theater up there, 175th Street and Broadway, the Palace Cathedral, he now calls it, packs in his 5,000 every Sunday, and launches a magazine, Action Magazine, with a readership of 6 million people. That's a very big readership for any publication of any kind you want to name. Then in the 1970s, he goes on the road, big time, to standing room only audiences. And where he doesn't show up in person, he's carried by radio hookup by over 1,770 radio stations throughout the United States. He was the first to fill Madison Square Garden's 20,000 seats in New York City for a non-sporting event. He was written up large in Fortune magazine, Sunday Times, New York Times magazine, London Sunday Times magazine. And coast to coast, he was known, as well as overseas. But how was he known? What was the take on Reverend Ike? So I'll be telling you a little bit about this morning, much of it in his own words, if I may be permitted to quote and borrow, drawn from his textbook, The Science of Living Study Guide. Now this, I claim, is a classic in our field. And yet, and we'll see why, our field doesn't even know about it. Oh, it's known to hundreds of thousands of people. But then you look at our so-called New Thought movement and you ask, why isn't this known? This is a classic. This is a very unusual book. It's got everything in it, essentially, that the Science of Mind textbook has, and the textbooks of Unity, Divine Science, the others. But it's in an entirely new and different vein. It's got a verb, a pizzazz. It's got a style and a flair that you won't find anywhere else. And it's very hard-hitting. It's very amusing in places, extremely witty, as the man himself was. In 1940, when Reverend Ike was 5 years old, Ernest Holmes' first lieutenant, Dr. Robert H. Bitzer, I call him first lieutenant, he was the first to take the religious science teaching from the Institute of Religious Science here in Los Angeles out to the field, as we call it, when they then called them chapters, later called them churches, today we call them centers. Robert Bitzer is also the grandsire of this center because he was the teacher of our Dr. David Walker. Well, he published in 1940 a little book called All Power to You, in which he wrote these very revolutionary words, from a religious point of view, certainly. More than meditation on God is God in me. More than knowing the truth about God, we must know the truth about man. You see how that harkens back to the foundings of this teaching. Not to turn to Revelation and ask what it has to say, or the high priest to interpret that for us, or to get the theologies and the dogmas and the doctrines, but instead to work from the inside out and see what we could verify, validate scientifically, empirically, by knowing all we can about ourselves, because again, as Dr. Holmes says, that's all we're ever really ultimately going to know about God. So Dr. Bitzer's words, more than meditation on God is God in me, more than knowing the truth about God, we must know the truth about man. Reverend Ike comes along and he says, the truth about man is God in me. And this single phrase, God in me, was the keynote and the whole of the ministry of Reverend Ike and the empowerment of those who would listen to him, the boss man whom we commemorate today. Now, he boldly said, if you're looking for a God in the sky to depend upon, if you're looking for a God outside of you to help you, forget it. God is within you. And when you discover God, you'll find him within your own being. Some people spend their entire lives praying for God's will, and there is no will of God outside of you to impose itself upon you. You are the one who decides whether or not you're going to be an independent, self-sufficient person. You are the one who decides whether or not you're going to be free. Free to be what you want to be. Free to do what you want to do. Free to have what you want to have. When you accept the presence of God within, you realize that the mind of God with its infinite ideas and its creative power is also within you. In this philosophy, we're not dealing with blind faith or dumb luck. This philosophy is a science. It is a technology for living because it teaches you how to determine the results you're going to achieve in life. This is a do-it-yourself church. The only savior in this philosophy is God in you. He was radiant as he spoke his words, and no wonder he attracted his thousands and his tens of thousands and over the airwaves and the television his millions. He believed these things deeply. But of course, there were many who were regarding him merely as another television evangelist, and they were thinking this is more of the same old stuff we're used to, you know, extending his empire with his hand in your pocket for those contributions that are necessary to keep such a gigantic work going. That's the only thing that so many could see in him. They did not even attribute to him because they didn't understand this message. This was not our New Thought people hearing. This was other people who never heard this before. And they thought, many of them, this is the most wonderful thing I've ever heard in my life. Others of them, this is a little suspicious. But he meant every word of it, as every bit as much as Reverend John, Dr. Walker, Robert Bitzer, Ernest Holmes. He said, it's wonderful to recognize the presence of God within you. Every time I think about the idea that God is in me, it excites me. I don't know if it excites you, but one of the most exciting things in my life is to realize that the presence of God is within me. Oh, he said, that lights my fire. That puts a tiger in my tank. When I say you can't lose with the stuff I use, his famous motto, I'm talking about the presence of God in you, the infinite capability of God in you, the unlimited love of God in you. How can you lose with God in you? Well, of course, God in you meant literally, not figuratively or metaphorically, as so many religions will talk about God in you, the presence of God in you. They don't mean it literally, the way our movement does. And if you're new to this and you wonder, well, how do we explain this? What do we mean by this? That's what this center is for. That's what Reverend John McLean is here to do. Excuse me, to explain that, to make it understandable and practicable in your life. But the God in you idea was a very new idea to the millions that were listening to Reverend Ike. And as I say, so many responded favorably. But he also had to endure the brickbats tossed at him by the ecclesiastical field and others who didn't get it. The other thing that he taught, which you might say is the second of the two bases of our teaching, is what we call the law of mind in action. And that teaches you, again, literally, not metaphorically or figuratively, that everything that comes up in your and my experience is the result exactly of what we feel habitually and deeply in our lives, and about everything, all across the field of health, wealth, love, self-expression, employment, friendships, all the rest. Everything that we think is coming to us is essentially coming from us. And then we could go even further than that and say that everything that you're seeing out there in the world is really some version of yourself. That, too, of the two bases, the essence of the presence and the action of the law, is not held by any of the major religions in its literalness. And it's certainly, sadly, not held by our leaders, our legislators, our elected officials, good people though they are. How many of them do you think base their lives on these two rock-bottom truths of ours, the essence of the presence in you, and at the same time, it's done unto you as you deeply feel and believe? I don't think many. So you can see that mainstream religion didn't have much use for Reverend Ike, and then a class culture society of the kind that we have so very much is a society that found Reverend Ike a little bit déclassé. He came on strong. He came on a little flamboyantly. He had a style that many people recoil from because they're more respectable than all that. For example, he was demonstrating everything he was speaking, so naturally he put on a very beautiful appearance that struck some people, however, as just a little bit beneath their dignity. So he had that kind of problem with people. in a race culture society, I'm sure so many thought, oh, here's another black church and it's doing. Sad to say, that I'm sure is how many, many shrugged him off. Civil rights leaders didn't know at first quite what to make of him, because with their very necessary concern with the material advancement of the people they're struggling for, improvements in the legislative, judicial areas, Reverend Ike seemed to be saying something else. He seemed to be talking about the root causes of all the inequity, the prejudice, the problems, the violence, all the difficulties, the myriad difficulties we deal with. And he was talking about the root. He was trying to go to the root and sort of cut the branches back, uproot the whole thing. But to many, I think initially anyway, in the civil rights movement, he seemed to be on another track, and they didn't know where that was coming from or where it was headed. And then you might say, what about the New Thought Centers, our people? Wouldn't they have thrown their arms around him and embraced him? They did not. I thought then, and I have always thought, that for the most part, the New Thought field regarded Reverend Ike as, let's say, the church on the other side of the tracks, you know, the part of town you don't go to. And in fact, that was confirmed to me just a couple of days ago when someone told me that she was in Denver, Colorado, the then head of the Divine Science Movement, back when Reverend Ike approached them about bringing his movement under their wing. And she said he was completely repulsed. They didn't want any part of him because he struck them as a TV evangelist and flamboyant and a little bit beneath their dignity. And she said to me, and she's doing a very major work today, she said, Divine Science would have benefited greatly with Reverend Ike in the field. I can believe they would. I think they'd be better off today if they had. Well, Reverend Ike was 100% New Thought. My teacher, Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, who some say did more for religious science than any other person since Ernest Holmes, the author of books some of you have read, Power of Decision, Treat Yourself to Life, he spoke regularly, as a matter of fact, for Reverend Ike up at the Palace Cathedral. They were buddies. And Reverend Ike was frequently down at 14 East 48th Street, Dr. Barker's headquarters, which today is a center for spiritual living in New York City. Let's take a look, if we may, at the two bases of our teaching and the way Reverend Ike carried them forward completely harmoniously with the Science of Mind teaching, which many of you know and study today. Reverend Ike says the greatest delusion of mankind is that he thinks he is separate from God. That's the only sin there is, because once man believes he's separate and apart from God, once he believes that he's not the son of God, then he acts like a son of a gun. Every other sin comes from this delusion. But if he believes in his oneness with God, all things are possible to him. And what about that other one on the other side of the great divide, the law of mind in action, which we take literally? He said, I teach what I call mind power. Some people have not been taught how to work their minds. Pardon the expression, they were taught how to work their behinds. I teach people, the more you learn to work your mind, the less you have to work your behind. This is using mind power. And you can't lose with the stuff I use. Speaking of money, and he spoke often of money, and he demonstrated it. You must learn, he said, to deal with the infinite economy of God within. The economy that does not economize. Everything begins in the mind. That's why I'm against anybody teaching so-called poor people to say, I am poor. If you don't want to be poor people, stop defining yourself as poor people. Define yourself as prosperous. You're never going to experience anything better than or other than your own self-definition. The label poor people is the most negative self-image psychology that there is, he said. Then there's another nice, neat label, culturally deprived. But anyone who's been exposed to my ministry, he said, can no longer claim he's culturally deprived. No man is poor. Deep within the heart of everyone, God has put the ability to be, to do, and to have the goodness of life, the richness of life. And remember, if it's all that difficult for a rich man to get into heaven, think how terrible it must be for a poor man to get in. He doesn't even have a bribe for the gatekeeper. So make sure your mind is at peace with money. For money comes to you through your mind. Everything comes to you through your own mind. Every time you say I can't, every time you think I can't, every time you feel I can't, you're denying the possibilities of God. Disbelieve all the reasons why you can't. Disregard your good excuses. Your excuses are too good. And there in the lobby of the church, the cathedral, on 175th Street and Broadway, Reverend Ike has seen to it that one of his most famous sayings is inscribed on the wall for those 10,000 eyes to see every Sunday. It reads, "There's nothing so bad as a good excuse. And the better the excuse, the worse it is." He said, "I got off the merry-go-round of poverty. I said, stop this mess. I want to get off. I said, I'm tired of going around in this poverty circle. I'm tired of going around in this lack and limitation circle. I'm tired of going around in this culturally deprived circle. And so I stopped that negative merry-go-round, and I got off. The world, other people, conditions will play with your mind if you let them. If you don't program your own mind, the world mind will. Don't let the world mind tell you how to think or how to feel." And in his affirmative treatment, he would segue into something like this. Right here and now, I stop the negative world mind merry-go-round. I get off the merry-go-round of negative thought. I got off all of those negative merry-go-rounds, and I'm not getting back on. I'm going to stay off through the presence and the power of God in me. I am being what I want to be, doing what I want to do, and having what I want to have. I'm out of the world's business and into the Father's business of health, happiness, love, success, prosperity, and money. Thank you, God in me. Well, this is just something of his message and something of its flavor. I wanted, as I was preparing this little tribute, to quote so much from this book. There is so much that's quotable. And what I've shared with you is not the whole of his message by any means. He spoke eloquently, grippingly on love, marriage, health, relationships, employment, expression. And if you want to find this book, all you have to do is go online or get someone to help you do that. If you Google Reverend Ike, you'll get there. But a shortcut, which will take you to the organization there in New York, is called R-E-V-I-K-E, revike.org. It's R-E-V, not with a period after the V, just Revike, R-E-V-I-K-E.org. And that will take you to a wonderful exposition of the life of Reverend Ike's teachings. It will show you how to get the book called A Science of Living Study Guide, which is very inexpensive, and a gem of a book. You will love every one of his 52 chapters, because one written for every week, you may take it at any pace you want, and you will be the richer for every word of it. Mark Victor Hansen, famous for his Chicken Soup for the Soul, and who was a big buddy of Reverend Ike's. And by the way, you can hear Mark Victor Hansen talk about Reverend Ike on the Ike website. He'll go on for something like 10 or 15 minutes. So Reverend Ike stole one from me. He said, "I'm going to have a little gold thing stuck on my book called, not Chicken Soup for the Soul, but Fried Chicken for the Soul." And it is every bit that. It's finger-licking good. And remember, he said, this is not a book to finish reading. No. None of our classics is a book you read and put down. It's a book that you pick up, it picks you up. On the occasion of Reverend Ike's passing, many paid their tributes. Reverend Michael Beckwith of the Agape Spiritual Center here in L.A. said, "His gift reverberates through each heart that has been touched by his humor, wisdom, and joy. I am grateful to count myself among them." Dr. James Trapp, the president of the Association of Unity Churches International, said, "Every so often a soul comes along who makes an indelible and positive mark on the minds and hearts of people to help them see and live from a higher point of view. Reverend Ike was and is such a person, a spiritual giant, a trailblazer, and model for the possibilities of the human spirit. He will always be an angel on the shoulder of all those he touched. Congressman Charles Rangel of New York said, "There's no doubt that Reverend Ike made a difference in people's lives. He spread a message of self-empowerment so desperately needed in our communities." And Reverend Al Sharpton, himself no stranger to controversy, said, "I knew him since my days as a boy preacher, and he impressed me with a sharp intellect and unshakable beliefs in what he preached. He fought to break a slave psychology in his own way and in his own style." Reverend Ike literally broke down the walls of the black church to where it became a church that taught the science of reality, the science of thinking, though he became quite controversial. What prophet hasn't? Yes, Reverend Ike did bear the brunt of the world mind's hostility to the idea of God in me, and its reluctance to embrace the fact that it is done unto us just as we have put it out there from within us. Hostility that can be measured every day in the horrendous news we're reading of overseas and even of here at home. It just seems to get daily worse, as Reverend McLean noted in his midweek postcard. But you see, Reverend Ike covered for us in religious science. He brought the teaching out to people who would never have gotten it without him. He brought the teaching literally to hundreds of thousands of people who didn't know we existed because the religions had built a nice little detour around us and our little churches talking to one another. And he suddenly broke the mold. And of course, with that, he brought a lot of misunderstanding upon himself, but thank heaven he also brought a great deal of understanding with it. So you see, we were all of us his community, though we didn't know it at the time. He told his people, meaning you and me by that, to get ready. People, get ready to become more if you wish to draw a greater good into your life. And 6 decades ago, speaking on a Sunday morning here in Los Angeles at the Fox Beverly Theater, I think it was, Dr. Ernest Holmes said these words: "Everywhere in the world, people will be interested in what you and I believe if it is presented in the right way. And they'll use it if they understand it. And they'll get results if they use it. It is the most dynamic thing on earth. I wouldn't be here if I didn't know that. And you wouldn't be either." To which Reverend Ike said, "I know it. I believe it, and I'm living proof of it." And so he was, and so he continues to be. Thank you, Reverend Ike, for being who you were and for being what you are. And thank you all for coming.